Hello and welcome to another episode of Walking the Field. My name is Gerald Hopkins. I'm joined by my co-host, Alex Crow, and we took an extended dead period, right? I know the dead period ended this month. We said, nah, we're not alive yet. But now we are risen from the dead to not only get recruited by whatever job offers are out in the market, none currently, but really to talk about the college football playoff, because there is some news that came out that can change the landscape of the sport. But before I get too deep into it, Alex, we haven't heard from you in like a month plus. What the hell's going on?
Well, I've been taking an extended hiatus. As you know, I've been working full time. I've recently decided that I, on a whim, was going to take the LSAT. So I've also been putting in effort studying for that as well. And, you know, there hadn't really been a whole lot of college football action, if you will. You know, we've been done for a while. Basketball's been done for a while. We don't really talk too much about college baseball, even though it's been pretty exciting. The College World Series is going to be starting this weekend. Of course, we most recently had the Softball College World Series, which is very exciting. But nonetheless, we finally got some big news and something to kind of talk about that's not recruiting, although, as you mentioned, the recruiting dead period is over. And so we'll probably have potentially some episodes in the coming weeks discussing that sort of stuff. But just to give you the little bit of synopsis, just to quote The Ringer here about the new system, the new college football playoff bracket would feature 12 teams, the six highest-ranked conference champions, and six at-large teams. The four highest-ranked conference champions would earn first-round byes, and the next four highest-ranked teams would host the teams ranked numbers 9 through 12 in first-round playoff games. After the first round, all of the games would take place at neutral sites. And so, Jerry, a 12-team playoff is what we've been faced with here. What are your initial thoughts? Was 12 the number that you thought would have happened? Because I got to be honest, I was thinking it was either going to be 8 or 16.
So I absolutely am surprised that it's 12, but I'm going to give as much context, because the nice thing we do have is a week of this information getting out to us. So I'm going to try to break down a little bit more into it before I give you an answer. The who, what, where, and why kind of idea right now, the who and who actually made this happen is a subgroup for the College Football Management Committee. There are four people in this subgroup. Most notably, the SEC Commissioner, Greg Sankey, the Big 12 Commissioner, Bob Bosley, the Mountain West Commissioner, Craig Thompson, and the Notre Dame Athletic Director, Jack Swarbrick. I think that is very important to mention, because I'll talk about that why in a little bit. There's a couple other reasons why, especially where did this happen? Well, of course, in Texas, Irving, Texas, to be specific. That's the original press release that we are referencing here. And here's how it would work so far, right? Right now, we could see this as early as 2023, but the current contract with ESPN and them really goes until the 2025 and 2026 season before we could see any change. But the change to 12 teams is something I did not expect. But so many different things happened in it that make it really interesting to me. I think the biggest one, like you already mentioned, the conference champions being the 1-4 teams that get a bye, is super, super interesting to me, right? Six conference champions also getting a spot, but also six at-larges is, you know, going to really change how we look at the season. I think that's a plus. But one thing to note, and this is why I wanted to really bring up who made this idea, I want you to think about this. You know what Notre Dame can't do anymore? They can't be a top four seed.
Yeah, they can't host with the new format.
There's so many things that, like, I don't know if they're going to completely pan out. Like, I like the idea that the first round games would be a home game for the 8 seed, right? Yeah. That's pretty cool. I don't know if it'll last, just because there's a lot of things you have to get through, a lot of hoops to jump through. I hope it does. I kind of think, like, they really should have the first four teams should also have a home game, but one step at a time. But I'm surprised they went to 12, but the way they formatted it to me is really interesting, and I actually really enjoy it.
Yeah, I do too. And to speak on why, of course, the first the top four seeds, I guess, wouldn't get a game, this allows them to keep with their New Year's Six tradition, and, you know, the fact that they're able to play those bowl games, if you will, just like they had the last couple of years with the college football playoff. I go back and forth on having the, you know, I guess the 5-8 teams, like you mentioned, host. I kind of go back and forth on whether I like that or not. I don't think I've fully formed my opinion on that yet, because there's a lot of things that go back and forth. But like you said, I really like that they are including six conference champions. I really, really like that. I think that, again, it gives merit to a group of five teams that think they've been snubbed, and it allows them to show their merit. And really, the biggest critique that you've seen from pundits and people that like to go and talk on TV and the radio is the fact that, you know, Alabama blows out the fourth seed team every single year. They did it to Notre Dame this year. That was no surprise. What are they going to do to a team that's seeded 5th through 12th? But I don't think that that necessarily has a ton of merit. If anything, it would just prove that Alabama is still the best team. I mean, if they're going to blow out the fourth team, why not have them, you know, why not make the fourth team prove something to get there and play Alabama and get blown out? So that's kind of what I'm thinking about that. Again, I like having a little bit more parity. We saw some great parity in March Madness this season. Of course, you have teams, not that you're going to have an Oral Roberts in the 12-team playoff, but I mean, it's a perfect example about how if you get hot at the right time, you can really make some noise. I think it also gives credit to the entire regular season to whereas, you know, you lose a game or two, your season's not over and you're not playing for nothing, which right now, that's basically the case.
Absolutely. And I think a great, wait a second. My mute button still doesn't work. We're getting back to, you know, we haven't done a podcast in a minute. I'm a little rusty here. But to go right off your point, Alex, I really do agree. Like, it does make the regular season that much better. And we can use last year as somewhat of a good example. And I want to give a lot of credit to The Athletic. The Athletic's done a great job on this. So we want to make sure we give, you know, the love where it's deserved. And Max Olson did a nice little article about, like, what would the last 10 years have looked like? And we can use last year. Especially, here's what the bracket looks like. Granted, you know, podcasting, the most visual medium that ever existed. Number one is Alabama. Number two is Clemson. Number three is Ohio State. But you know who would be number four under these new rules? Oklahoma. Team that wasn't in the playoffs, but they won the Big 12. And one of the hottest teams in the nation at that point. We have to remember, after they lost those two games to Kansas State and Iowa State, they won everything and actually smoked the other team, ranked team they had to play at that point. They beat Texas in that triple overtime game. Super fun. But then smoked Oklahoma State in the rivalry, I think it's called, right? I don't know if it's a rivalry if one side always wins, but Bedlam, you know, wherever they think it is, right? The fifth seed you go to is Notre Dame because they could not be a fourth seed. But they would then play Coastal, right? Coastal Carolina, our favorite Chanticleers. The sixth seed would have been Texas A&M. They would have played Indiana, the Hoosiers. Think about this. I'm already naming teams from last year had a great time, right? We would have seen the Cincinnati-Georgia game again, and we would have seen Florida-Iowa State. Those are some fantastic games, like absolutely marvelous games if you think about the system we had. And it also does reward a Coastal Carolina, but it also rewards a Florida. Florida had a great game in the SEC Championship against Alabama, the team that ended up winning it all. And really, they shouldn't have got pooped on for their one LSU loss, if we really want to go down that route, right? If we think Alabama was one of the best teams in the country, the best team. And Florida gave them a game. Them and Ole Miss were the only two teams. The expanded format gives you that opportunity to say, oh, you're really hot, like you're Oklahoma? You have a chance. Oh, Coastal Carolina, you've won like every game. Hey, congratulations. Hey, Cincinnati, you can literally almost beat anybody in the country, and you've proven that. Nice. And that's what this 12-team playoff gives an opportunity to. I don't think it's going to be as inclusive as we're giving it hope to, just because it's like, you tell me if we have the 12-team playoff, do you think Coastal gets the 12 seed? I don't know, right? And this is a gripe.
Well, they would only get it. They would only get it by virtue of being the highest ranked conference champion. That's what it would be.
Did they win it though? Remember the Sun Belt was they got the game got canceled. So I don't remember if they got the title for it.
That's true. They would have had to play. They would have had to play for it. I think is what it would happen. Or they could have just said, you know, by virtue of the fact that they beat BYU and were more highly ranked at the end of the season than UL, then they probably would have gotten it. I get what you're saying, though.
You know, and it's still imperfect, but, like, it's so much better because the thing I really love is it rewards the team that has that season. Like, in Indiana, especially. It's the team that I saw, or in Iowa State. Two teams that had a fantastic run the whole regular season. They did what they had to, and they weren't perfect. But we can't guarantee we'll see that from Indiana again. We can't guarantee we'll see that from Iowa State, the same way we could do with a Clemson and Alabama, etc. So celebrating the teams that have that one year, one I think can relieve some job tension, right? If Tom Allen says year four is my year, and then he goes out and wins in year four, oh my God, he's in the playoff. He's not in some New Year's Six bowl where everyone's going to opt out in. So it's there is some a lot of wins in this. It's not going to be perfect. The weird winner of this, if we want to be go down to that point already, it's going to be the SEC. The SEC is going to get like four teams in, knowing them. But there is opportunities for a group of five teams to at least have a chance. And that's all we've been asking for a while. We've not seen a group of five team in ever. And now at least we have a chance to see them in a first or a second round. At least give them a game. Shit, I wanted to see UCF play in 2017 at least once. I wanted to see Cincinnati play at least once in a real game. And look at the game they gave to Georgia. And this is a Georgia team that didn't really opt out. This is not like, let's be fair to them. They played their real team and they gave them one hell of a game. this is the opportunities that we now get with this new playoff format, and I hope it happens as soon as possible.
And I'm glad you mentioned something about that, because that was really going to be my next point. I think that the biggest winner, because I know that in our notes we kind of went back and forth about, you know, is that, you know, how does this affect the bowl landscape? You know me, I'm not a big fan of the College Bowl structure. I think that it means nothing. I think there's like 20 too many bowls. I think that they reward mediocre teams with bowl games that shouldn't get bowl games, that sort of thing. Nobody wants to watch the Cheez-It Bowl, right? Like, nobody cares. And on top of that, you know, you see, just hearkening back to this method that was put together, you know, about who would have made the playoffs in this new proposed system last year, you look at Florida playing Iowa State. Florida's entire team doesn't opt out if they're playing in the playoffs. All of a sudden, you're not missing 15 guys, and you say, well, we played our last game last week. You know, that's ridiculous. And I think that that is something where if these teams have something to play for, you're not going to see guys opt out. You know, opt out of a bowl game? Absolutely. Opt out of a New Year's Six bowl game. It is what it is. I get it. You're looking at your future. But you're telling me that in a playoff situation, half of Florida teams is going to opt out when they're in the playoffs? I it's just not going to happen. And that makes better TV. If I'm wanting to watch Florida, if I'm a Florida fan, I want to watch Florida starters play. If I didn't want to watch Florida starters play, I'd watch, you know, the spring game. So I think it makes for good TV. It's all about revenue for college football. They're going to make a lot of it from changing to this, I think. And again, I think that one of the biggest arguments is that, oh, well, the top four teams are just going to blow everyone out. They might. They might blow everyone out. But if they don't, you know, now you've got cause to be worried. Because, again, it's all about being hot at the right time. I mean, you've seen multiple times the last couple of years where Ohio State's lost a game in, like, week one or two to a mediocre team, and they've nearly or have missed out on the playoffs when, in fact, they won their last nine games. Something like that. Again, you mentioned Oklahoma. They went on a kill streak at the end of the season in the Big 12, a Big 12 that was pretty good this year. But because they dropped a couple games early to some solid squads, all of a sudden they're ineligible for the playoffs, even though they won their conference. I think that it's good that they're having conference winners make it, because, again, no matter who you're playing, it's tough to win a conference in college football. There's so much competition, so many great athletes, and that sort of thing. And I also like that it doesn't give guarantees to Power 5 schools. If nobody in the Pac-12 is good, nobody in the Pac-12 might make, they might not make it. So I do like that it's the top four teams, or the top six conference champions, regardless of conference. So I think it's a really nice looking system. The only thing that I thought was weird, Jerry, and we can talk about this just for a little bit briefly, is I'm just surprised that they didn't look at kind of their other systems. You know, like in the FCS, it's a 16-team playoff. And I don't know why they kind of deviated from that model.
I think it's a step at a time. I thought, really, if we were, you know, to make a bet on this before we got this news, we were kind of both thinking 8, right? It was going to be the next number. So, like, the fact they went from 4 to 12, I think, is pretty big already. I think the problem you run into, especially with these guys, is you can only play so many games. And I don't know what NIL will do to that. I think it could be a positive change, right? And obviously, it's a positive change. NIL should already exist. But you don't want to keep putting these kids through more and more games. That's what that 16 group tournament could do. You know, and that's one of those things where it's like, yeah, cool, we're getting, you know, one or two more games for television, but you put another game on a kid's body that's not getting paid by the university. That's a fair question, I think, with the 16-team model. And are we going to act like college football's ever been the same as any other sport ever? Why are we going to do that now? Like, college football's been weird. It's one of the few somewhat regional sports left, even when it's become more national, right? Like, this game's always been weird. Think about it. At first, they were like, we're just going to pick number one and number two, and they're going to play. Who does that? Who does that? Nobody, right? Like, not even NASCAR. At least in NASCAR, you have to race it out. Like, they're like, ah, you got a perfect schedule. You got one. We like you to play. It may be at a Rose Bowl for this, you know, for this football. Like, this has been the weirdest part of it. Like, I think 12 is an interesting number just because, yeah, it doesn't really make sense to anything else. But it is at least a double digit. Like, more opportunity to me as, like, it's a dual-edged sword. I don't think it's going to necessarily mean that, like, Indiana's now going to turn to a powerhouse in the Big Ten. They're going to challenge Ohio State. No, they're not, right? Like, this is not going to be the game changer, but it does give more people just a chance. And, you know, we get better, like you talked about, better TV. You know, could they have done 16? Sure. But, like, I think the way they also worked in more chances for conference championships, and like already a lot of the, we saw a lot of compromise. And I think that's something where like, I'm happy with 12 because I saw both sides kind of give in, right? Like, I'm so fascinated by the Notre Dame side of this, where the AD who had a seat at this table, mind you, right, was like, we'll risk never being a top four seed and getting a bye to get a better chance to be in the tournament every year by being an at-large team. They could, like, compromise. I haven't heard about that in, like, 10 years. This is crazy. So, like, yeah, you could go 16, but the fact that we've seen these groups actually work together to make a proposal that kind of fits more needs and fills more needs is really cool. One more thing I want to add. You talked about, like, the six conference champions. Let's be real here. That's going to be the Power Five and probably the American, unless the Sun Belt turns up again. Like unless the Pac-12 falls asleep, like, completely, it's going to be the Power Five and probably the American and maybe the Sun Belt if the American's down. Like, I'm a little cynical in that sense, right? Like, we'll see a probably Cincinnati and a UCF here and there. I don't expect, like, let's say Louisiana wins it this year over Coastal. They wouldn't take over in Oregon 9 times out of 10. You know, this year the Pac-12 is down, super duper down, and who knows when it gets back up. This also helps them get back up a bit, right? And so when I see the six conference championships, I'm like, yeah, you're gonna. This is the way of saying the Power Five and whatever, you know, group we like right now, in my opinion. But we'll see.
Yeah, it'll just kind of depend. Last thing that I'll say about this, and at least comparing it to the FCS championships, again, just another, I guess, chink in the armor of the whole, oh, well, if we have the 16th team play the number one team, you're going to see a bunch of blowouts. You didn't see that in the FCS, and you don't see it in the FCS in the playoffs. I mean, again, you take out, especially if you take out the first round games, where we had a couple of games that were decided by more than two touchdowns. After that, the only game that was decided by more than two touchdowns was the semifinal game between South Dakota State and Delaware. Delaware, who was just a very defensive-based team, didn't really have a lot of offense all season and just got blown out by a superior offensive team. And so I don't really necessarily think that'll happen. And if it does, at least, you know, Alabama's going to know, or whoever wins is going to know, that they were the best team and it wasn't even close. So that's really what I think about that. Now, Jerry, you want to move on to, I guess, really the biggest winners. And well, actually, before I do that, you know, I've got to, going back to your point about Notre Dame, you know, I've got to, now that I've made so many friends from Notre Dame in my internship, I've got to tone down a little bit on the Irish slander, much to my grandma's dismay, because she likes to slander them too.
Oh, bring it on. Stop being a baby. This is your place to slander the Irish. You're not at the workplace. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, to me, should never deserve a top four seed. Their track record in the last 20 years in those games has been horrifying. They have not come within two touchdowns of tying a team in a college football playoff atmosphere. So them being a 5-8 seed, I don't think is that bad. In fact, I think it could actually help them because, you know, say you're a Notre Dame, you get one of those 5-8 seeds, or really you just get into the playoff. Now all of a sudden you've got a tune-up game before you've got to play Alabama or Ohio State or LSU or Clemson or Oklahoma, whoever they end up drawing in the top four seeds. You've at least got a tune-up game to where you can play that fierce competition. You get in under the lights. You're a little bit more battle-tested. Because I think that's typically Notre Dame's biggest thing, is they just hadn't played in a whole lot of big games, right? And so every time they get thrown out there, they're all of a sudden they get thrown into the fire and they get burned pretty badly. So I actually think it could help a team like Notre Dame and teams that haven't been there. You know, again, you know, me and you have talked about outside of the show that it's looking like you're going to see some new teams here in the future. Of course, Iowa State making quite the climb with Matt Campbell. Texas A&M very much on the rise with Jimbo Fisher. Indiana had a solid season last year. Georgia, perennially top recruiting team the last couple of years. So I think you're going to start seeing some new faces, and I think having a potential play-in game, if you will, is something that'll just help ease the nerves when you're going into playing the toughest competition in college football.
Yeah, and I think it's just better matchups, right? Like, usually the top 12 every year are a pretty solid group of teams. Now, we're going to sit here once in a while and go, we didn't really need 12. And that's fine. But, like, even if, let's say, the 5-12 game is a great game and the, you know, 6-11 is not as good, that doesn't matter. We got one more good TV game. We got one more good chance to see teams play each other. And I think that's the biggest win out of all of this, right? Not just good TV, but it's the fact that, like, oh, yeah, we're rewarding these groups for doing something really good. And I think we're going to switch it off here. Let's get into these winners. I had a couple, and I think it's obvious, and I already said it, and I had no order, but the SEC is my winner in this. the SEC really is going to get the benefit of the doubt, I think, at more at-large bids in the first place. They usually do, right? Like, you give me, an SEC team like the Aggies, they'll go probably higher than a Big 12 team unless the Big 12 is absurdly good, right? You can argue there's SEC bias in the playoffs. Sure, I don't care. I don't have time for that, right? But more times than not, the SEC wins recruiting rankings. They're the team, they have the teams most in the top 12, top 15, top 25. So them having more chances to get more money and also be in it just kind of makes the richer richer. And I think that's why this is so interesting, is because the 12-team playoff is like, it's not about parity. And I need to make this very clear. The 12-team playoff is giving more people a chance at a pie. A pie being the money that's going to come from these games. It's not happening because we are trying to take away from Alabama. No. Alabama is still going to be the perennial powerhouse until Nick Saban does whatever he does. Because I can't say he's going to ever retire, and I don't know if he'll ever die. Right? So, like, we don't know what's happening next in that man's life. But Alabama's going to be good then. Dabo Sweeney will be there, for about maybe 3-4 years at the, minimum. Clemson will still be good. Ohio State's still going to be good. But we have to stop, and we had to stop shutting teams out. I think Cincinnati was my example of this last year. Like, Cincinnati couldn't do anything. They played the schedule they had to play because of COVID. Did everything they could to prove they're a very good team. And didn't even get close. Like, their first ranking, they were like 9. It's like, what the hell else are they supposed to do? Like, they were outside the picture before they even lost the game. This gives those guys a chance. But, like, even if one Cincinnati gets in, so will Auburn, LSU, Georgia will sneak in. And the rich are still getting richer in this moment. The SEC somehow, even unintentionally, is going to win this.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, if you look, again, you cited that article that kind of broke down from The Athletic the last 10 years and what the breakdown would look like. I mean, it's not even close. It's not even that the SEC is getting, bias in the top 4 spots or the top 2 spots or whatever. I mean, the SEC would have put 32 teams. That's 3 teams out of 12, over 3 teams out of 12, in fact, every single year, right? And 2 years with 4 teams, basically, is what that averages out to over a 10-year period. The SEC is good for a reason. I mean, the SEC West alone is better than pretty much every conference in college football. That's just a fact. Like, you just don't – there's not a lot of conferences have in Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M. The teams from Mississippi, they're not bad either. And we look at them like they're no good just because they can't beat Alabama and LSU. When in fact, I think that if you would have seen the Lane train in another conference, I mean, you could potentially be talking about someone who's knocking up for a championship potentially. You put them in the Pac-12, I think Ole Miss wins that. So I think that the SEC, of course, does get biased, but it's rightfully so. I mean, you're looking at the best players and the best conference that play the toughest schedule. So. It'll be interesting. So, yeah, they're obviously going to be the biggest winner. Just before you go into your more winners, obviously college football is going to win as well. Better TV ratings, better bowl games, hopefully less bowl games. I know that some people have said that it's possible that in order to accommodate the extra playoff games, you might see potentially that you might see teams kind of cut down on the fluff in the beginning of their schedule. You're not seeing Texas A&M play teams like Prairie View A&M and Lamar just for fun, just to kill them. So I think that could also make college football better because, let's be honest, nobody really wants to watch that game. It's just not – it's not good TV. It's a blowout. It's a beatdown. And it doesn't really bring you in a whole lot of money. So I think that shifting – if I have to sacrifice a game against an FCS school or, a very, very low mid-major type of school, and instead I get to watch I get to watch Texas A&M in Indiana instead of Texas A&M in Lamar – I'm going to make that trade every day on the week, every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Like, there's no debate about that.
Are you working on Sunday?
No, I'm not.
You bad person.
I'm not. I could.
You just said you trade twice on Sunday. That's double work.
The only work I'm doing on Sundays is fantasy football.
That's double work. You're working twice to trade.
So that's facts.
This is – I'm reporting you to the Christian police for working on Sunday.
Yes, report me to the Pope.
That's Catholic. But, whatever – whatever realm you need me to go through, I'll do it, right? But while the Pope locks up Alex here, the second winner I had was the Pac-12, and it's because who I haven't seen in the college football playoff for, like, almost 5 years? The Pac-12. Like, The Pac-12 is its own little mess, but now there's a chance, right? I think Oregon's kind of on the upswing, and they have, like, the best opportunity here. But, like, you get one Pac-12 team in there, you get some money, you get a chance, right? A lot of this comes down to, one, recruiting, and two, money. And what happens when you get cut out of the pie, especially the pie that gets a lot of money from the college football playoffs, it hurts everybody in your conference, right? You think USC would like $30 million extra dollars or whatever they get from, you know, they would get from the college football playoff? Yes, even if Oregon makes it, and they don't, right? Just a chance to give them, like, this is still a Power 5 conference that just is lagging in football a bit. This is an opportunity to give them a little bit of hope, a little bit more chances to get back at it. I don't see the Pac-12 as dead. Some people are kind of going through that, you know, oh, is it the American or the Pac-12? No, the Pac-12 still is what it is. But you got to help yourself. And one of the reasons that Larry Scott is not the commissioner anymore is the reason he didn't fight for this. And when he fought for it, it was too late. The teams were already getting punching. They were the punching bags at this point. Now, the new commissioner, who I don't remember off the top of my head, is going to come in, hopefully knowing that, like, hey, we just have to get one or two in to start. And we have to just give our name. And, like, more primetime football games. You know, who are the people who watch the Pac-12 After Dark? The weirdos. You know, and that's not a bad thing. We love college football weirdos. We want more college football weirdos to listen to us. You know, we think we are some, right? But, like, if you're a national recruit and you're in Texas, you're not staying up for Pac-12 After Dark. Not in God's time. I'm not doing that. Like, I'm going to sleep. I got to go work out tomorrow. If I can see USC or Oregon in a national game, you know, a primetime game, oh, you know, maybe I want to go to see Eugene now. They look legit. You know, some of the best times, remember when Oregon had those really good teams? Those really fast teams? That was fun. They have the cool uniforms, great campus. We haven't got a chance to really, like, appreciate some of that great, the great parts of college football like that, because that whole region's felt like it's been down. So giving them a chance to, one, get more money, but two, some more exposure, feels like such a win.
I agree. I think the Pac-12 has a ton to gain from this. And to harken back to a point that we made earlier, the biggest thing with the Pac-12 is now all of a sudden their season means something. Previously, the Pac-12, of course, you know, you lose, you know, one game, two games early in the Pac-12 schedule, which is seen by pretty much anyone who watches college football as probably the weakest of the Power Five conferences. All of a sudden, you kind of know your season is over. Now, all of a sudden, the Pac-12 has a chance to play its way in. And we saw the Pac-12 in basketball this season play its way into the tournament. You saw a bunch of teams that nobody thought was going to be, you know, were too good. You see a team like Oregon State make a lot of noise. UCLA come from the first four out all the way to, the last four in, all the way to, you know, the final four, and played a great season. So I think that, you know, they should be able to give themselves a chance. I think that this new playoff format really allows for that. And the other thing, I think that the Pac-12, again, we've mentioned they've been missing in kind of the national landscape, but they've got some great brands in the Pac-12. You mentioned Oregon. You can also throw out USC as well. It is a brand that's been somewhere. You hear lately, especially this season, because the Knicks have been good. The Knicks weren't even super exciting to watch this year, but just because the Knicks were in the playoffs, it was something that people were talking about because it's such a big brand. USC is that type of brand, and Oregon is that type of brand just to start off in the Pac-12. And I think that college football is better when they are good and when they are in the spotlight. And I think that they should be able to have a chance really to compete again on this big national stage. So that way the recruits can get a really nice look at these schools playing football and they don't have to stay up till midnight.
Yeah, like I remember how big of a deal it was just recently when Corey Foreman, the number one prospect in the, I think it was 2021 class, committed to California because that's not normal, right? Imagine we get five more of those. Imagine the Trojans are back, right? There's a reason there's documentaries about those USC teams, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, etc. Because this was some of the craziest and most exciting times in college football. It's what, some of the stuff we love. Pac-12, definitely a winner from the expansion. No, it's a group that definitely won, the G5. And I get it. Yeah, I was kind of saying, like, I expect the G5 to really get tons of spots, but at least they get one, right? At least we get to see them. We're rewarding those teams for a great season. I think the American becomes basically the Power Six in this, unintentionally. They won't be branded as it, but they'll kind of get that love because right now the American, out of all the other G5s, I can would argue is the best conference, or at least has the most top-heavy talent and has the best chance of making it. You could say maybe the Sun Belt sneaks in there, you know, if they're really hot. But, like, I feel like the Sun Belt's kind of streaky, and, you know, you lose Brian Napier and Jamie Chadwell, what the hell is the Sun Belt, right? Luke Fickell is more likely to stay, I think, at Cincinnati than Jamie Chadwell is at Coastal. And you can, and do you think Gus Malzahn's leaving UCF? I think it's easier right now if it, like, let's throw a hypothetical out here right now. In the 5-year span, I see UCF being in, having a better chance of now making the college football playoff than Tennessee. That didn't exist just literally 2 or 3 years ago.
Than Tennessee? Oh, I think that's cap. I think that even with the current playoff, with Gus Malzahn at the helm and at UCF and Tennessee, the nightmare that is Tennessee Volunteer football, I mean, the Rodgers Eagles have a better chance of making the college football playoffs than they do, and they played 3A in high school. That, I mean, they run the option. Tennessee has no chance of making the playoffs unless they expand it to like a 64-team playoff and they win the SEC tournament.
And then,
that's how Tennessee is getting.
And
into
see,
the
that's
playoffs.
My point. Like, just 2 or 3. Like, even now, right? Because UCF was a G5 school, I don't think they'd ever make the playoff, ever. But now with this 12-team format,
it would be tough.
Now with this 12-team format, they have better chances than some Power 5 schools, and like. That is, and it's fair because these bottom feeding Power 5 schools shouldn't get that much of a reward for being the worst in the best, right? But now we're getting the best of maybe not the greatest, at least a chance. We're giving them a shot. And like, who knows? We're going to get an upset here and there. Will they be all the time? No. But like, hey, what if Cincinnati now becomes a top 25 program because they have a head coach who's built that program out really nice? Oh, and now you're going to care about Cincinnati all year, right? My favorite is, remember when BYU was still undefeated and they were like, oh yeah, you're 14th. No, well, what are we going to do now? I don't know. If I was a Cougar fan, I'd be so mad. I would be mad at the playoff system. Now you're 14. Oh, that's 2 spots out. Oh, we're playing Coastal now? We could be in the playoff, right? Look at how much these things change just because I could say, oh, you still have a chance if you're 15. You know how crazy Mizzou would have been when we were in the top 25 for a week? Like, oh, look, we're only like 13 to 14 spots out. And if we beat Georgia, who knows? You know, like little things like that are a win, but especially for G5 programs, those who've been deserving of an opportunity are finally getting one. And that's always a win. We have to reward teams for doing, for winning. And sometimes it always hasn't felt that way. Now we're starting to get there, and the G5s are right in the center of that.
Right. And so, like you mentioned, obviously with the top 6, conference champions getting automatic seeds in the playoffs. That obviously guarantees that one non-Power 5, as there are only 5 Power 5 conferences, quick math by me, is obviously going to have at least one G5 in the playoffs. And that, if a G5 is able to do some work in the playoffs, if they're able to knock off some of these teams, that changes the perception of the conference. Because now all of a sudden you're saying, wait a minute, you know, again, you could hypothetically say Cincinnati or UCF. You know, you see a UCF knock off a team. Not that it would happen, but say they knock off like an A&M. Okay. Or they knock off a Georgia. Okay, you knock off the second best team in the SEC. Okay, maybe the schedule that they played wasn't as bad as we think looking at, you know, with just an eye test of the resume. You know, all of a sudden, maybe the Americans got a lot more to offer than we previously thought. Maybe the Sun Belt is not just a bunch of, you know, not just a bunch of fun schools like Coastal Carolina that we like watching. But it's not necessarily prime time material based on their performance on the field. And it allows you to change that perception. And I think that that will help eliminate some of that bias, you know, the SEC bias, the Clemson bias, Ohio State bias, whatever. I think that it really allows for these teams to make some noise and to move forward in the future if they're able really to stick with it. And I think it's going to be great for college football, again, because when you're eliminating that bias, you start to get a clear picture of teams that deserve to be in the playoffs are making it to the playoffs.
You can make the argument that Cincinnati giving Georgia basically everything it can handle was that last year in a New Year's Six game. But now give that to me in the first round where Cincinnati is hosting Georgia, you know, and it's a little cooler outside. And instead of playing in the dome, you know, they're playing outside in Cincinnati. Who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe some things change. You know, the Georgia Bulldogs drop a couple passes. It's a different game. You know, that's where this 12-team playoff, and also where I kind of like the home games, but that's a different kind. You know, we can get into that a little bit later. The fourth winner I had, and we've already kind of mentioned this, the most elite teams in the sport are still going to win. One, you get a bye. Two, you don't have to be perfect, right? I think that perfect example of this, Ohio State, right? You lose that one weird game, and now you're out of the playoffs. No, now they're just the 8th seed. And, you know, for these teams, they've just lifted a weight off the shoulders that really was, you know, the only thing that kind of could keep them down. You know, like oh, if Alabama loses two games, we may not see him in the college football playoff. Now, they're not the most elite this year. Well, they can lose two games, and if it's by a combined total of 7 points, they might still be in it. You made it, and so that's, again, where this becomes super interesting, but the most elite teams aren't going to be hurt from this because they don't have to be perfect. They don't need a bye. If they're that good, they'll still win, and they still will. Like, if you're going to tell me next year Clemson won't be in the playoff, that's a risky, bold take. That's the same thing with, like, an Ohio State or an Alabama, right? So, like, giving these guys now 9 more seeds to work with and a chance to get a bye, it's a win for them, too.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'll even go even farther and say that it's not the elite teams necessarily that are winning, but it's the coaches of these teams, right? Because in a 4-team playoff year, if Ohio State loses a game or two, they're probably not making the – I mean, it's very possible they don't make the playoffs, right? Like, it's a dicey – it's not a sure thing. All of a sudden, they miss the playoffs a couple of years. Is Ryan Day's job in jeopardy? With a 12-team playoff, a team like that's not going to miss the playoffs, right? And so then they can right the ship in the playoffs. Again, because if they lose a game in week two, but then they win their next 10 games, they're going to get into the playoffs pretty easily. They've got an opportunity to knock down in the semifinal round and then – or excuse me, in the quarterfinal round, then the semis, and then the finals – And you know, you're right back. You aren't even near the hot seat, really. And I think that it really helps the coaches of these programs out as well. Because not that you'd want to bank on Ohio State losing, you know, one or two games every single season. Because as you saw last year, as they turned it on, especially in the college football playoff, they can play football. I mean, they can score pretty solid on defense, and they've got a ton of talent and great recruiting chops. I mean, they get the number 1, 2, and 3 players from all the best states. So, I mean, they're going to be hard to beat, I think, coming into the future. But, again, I think that it really – it gives you a little bit of a lifeline to where if you lose two games and you're Ohio State and the two games you lose are two very highly ranked Big Ten opponents or a crossover, you know, with maybe a Big 12 team or an SEC team that you just you play a close game and you lose, now you don't have to worry about it. Your season still means something because you're still probably going to sneak in as a 12 seed. Right, it's more than possible. You get one of those at large spots, and then all of a sudden you're on a 10-game winning streak. You come back, you might play the exact same team and beat them just because you are not the same team that you were a month, you know, 3 months ago, essentially. Because that was what a lot of people, and that was one of the things that was highly debated in the SEC circles was, well, A&M, they didn't play Alabama as closely as Florida did, and when Florida played them at the end of the season. A&M played him in like the third week, but you know, a couple weeks after they lost to A&M beat Florida. And so, you know, A&M, they closed out their season just like a house on fire and were unstoppable. And Florida, I mean, of course they played Alabama close. They lost that game and they lost that game to A&M as well. And so I like that this really gives teams the opportunity to show a full season's body of work and show how they've progressed. And the fact that they're not going to get punished for not being amazing at the beginning of the season, but being the best team at the end of the season. And I think that it really allows the season to mean a lot more, like we've said.
You know how you're like, we don't want to bank on Ohio State losing one or two games, but we don't want to bank on them going undefeated either, right? And it's kind of the same thing. Like, it makes it easier for those Ryan Days. I think that's a great point, that these coaches basically just got lifetime contracts, unless it's like they have to get a bye once every 3 years, which that's not impossible. They've been doing it before, right? My final winner, because we were kind of describing a different team when we were talking about Ohio State as our example, that's Georgia. Georgia's like the ultimate winner of this because they are the team that recruits up there with the Alabamas, the Ohio States, with LSU. They get the talent, and every year they have the one game. And that game's usually Alabama, right? So like now, whether it's the SEC championship or the Stenson Bennett game, like you have a chance to see, you know, Georgia still has a chance. And like last year they had a chance too. That was a hot team with JT Daniels that looked like their offense had finally figured it out, right? But they've always been the team that's kind of either they're really good, but they're Georgia. Georgia will Georgia one time a year. And now if they Georgia, they're not out of the playoff. They just might not have a home game or they might not have a bye week. And I'm Kirby Smart, I'm sitting here going, get this in 2022. Don't even wait for 23. Get it in now. Get it through whoever, because he's done the legwork. You know, if anything, I feel bad for the guy. He's recruited his tail off. He's won 99%. You know, he's won 90% of his games. He always just felt like Georgia always came up short, and they always do. Now, they're going to be in the mix every year. And who knows? You get hot again, Kirby Smart might finally have a chance, that real chance at that title that the one game has always taken away from him. You know, we talked about the Pac-12 and all them. Georgia themselves, the Bulldogs, are winning this. They're the big winner from the 12-team playoff.
And I completely agree. I know that we kind of presented this list of our five kind of winners in no particular order, but I would argue that Georgia, or you could even go as broadly as the SEC East, is the biggest winner out of everyone. You know, out of the SEC, the Pac-12, the G5, the elite teams, whatever you want to call it, the SEC East has been really kept out of the playoffs pretty heavily because they lose the last game of their regular season every single year. They lose to Alabama, they lose to LSU, and it happens every time. And so that's, and it's like in the committee's mind, it's a more inexcusable loss because you could say, okay, well, Ohio State might have lost the first game of their season, you know, but the team, you know, if they would have played them, if they would have played this team that they played in the first game and lost, if they would have played them in week 12, they would have beaten them. You lose that argument when you lose the conference championship because you've had the entire season to progress. That's who you are going into the playoff for the bowl season. And so it discredited the arguments that they've had. And I think that Georgia has had some merit the last couple of years into possibly being a playoff team. I think that they've, you know, they've been able to make an argument. I think that Florida is not bad either. And I think that Mizzou, you're going to start seeing them, you know, on the come up as well. So I think that it really helps those teams because now you're not going to get absolutely crucified by getting handled by Alabama or LSU or A&M or Ole Miss. You know, whoever comes out of, the vaunted SEC West, you're not going to get crucified for losing that game, right? The championship of the SEC East, more times than not, unless it's a season like this season where you've got – well, I mean, even in this season, you know, you saw actually Florida and Georgia make it if they would have had the hypothetical playoff scenario this season. But, you know, unless that Auburn, LSU, Alabama, A&M, you know, unless that they all like round robin and they all have one loss to each other in some like bizarro tiebreaker type thing, you're going to see an SEC East team in the playoffs, I think, pretty much every year. I think that they're basically a lock for an at-large just because I don't think that any other conference would send a ton of people. Because like you look at the Big Ten this year, there wasn't another Big Ten team that would have competed for an at-large spot. I mean, I think the next closest team was who? Northwestern. So, you know, I don't really buy that. The Pac-12, as we mentioned, horrible. The ACC, I mean, the ACC did send two teams technically because Notre Dame and Clemson went. But they didn't have another team that was just knocking on the door in the way that all those SEC teams were. So I think that the SEC...
Well, North Carolina was there.
But they weren't...
North Carolina would be your argument.
That's
like,
true.
They weren't there.
They
like,
weren't
those
highly
teams
rated,
like a North
though.
Carolina or Miami could knock.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were knocking on the door for some time. But that's where they're like a team like next year's North Carolina that's supposed to be real good has a chance at it. That's where this is fun too. Like we didn't mention all the conferences because the ACC has been really top heavy, right? They've been Clemson and then there was like 1 year Florida State, Clemson, and then like you know everyone else is kind of figuring it out from there. Go Duke, right? Like you know Big 12 just been where's Texas? But Oklahoma's going off. But like. The fact that Georgia really has this opportunity to, like, now every year basically make it and not worry about their one loss to Alabama is fantastic. But for every winners like Georgia, there's one or two losers. The first one is the bowl game system. And I know me and you are not the biggest fan of the bowl game system because now people are realizing, who cares? Like, the Cheez-It Bowl is not the big deal. You know, and I can't even slander the Cheez-It Bowl. Cheez-It Bowl is one of the cooler bowls in the system. Like, if we had just kept the Duke Mayo Bowl and the Cheez-It Bowl, and just said, screw everything else, I think I'd be fine, personally. But there is a lot of money tied up into these bowl games. And the one thing I do want to make sure still happens, like, why I'm a little conflicted as well about having the semifinals and the national games have a bowl, is you don't get the bowl experience. Like, I think part of what gets lost is, like, bowl games are not just for the fans. They're not just, like, so you as an Aggie fan can watch, you know, them play, you know, the Aggies play North Carolina. It's so that those guys who had an 11, you know, one season can go somewhere and have some fun, you know, and I don't want that to necessarily go away. I think that it's worth rewarding the players with opportunities like that to, you know, oh, let's go down to Nashville and play a team and stuff like that. I'll miss that. What I will not miss is, you know, part of it like, oh, we're going to go to Idaho. What is there to do in Idaho? What are you going to give them? More potatoes? What are they going to do? Give that to their dining hall? Like, the bigger bowls, you can argue, like, yeah, this is going to be a little bit of an issue. You don't want to take kids away from, like, you know, if you're Wisconsin, you get to go play in Florida. You're going to want to play, you know, or at least be there to enjoy that. So the bowl games and the bowl system does take another hit in this you know, another hit. It feels like in many hits, but some of it's deserved. This is kind of old money protecting old money, and in a way, you're kind of just going, yeah, screw you. We don't need this old money anymore. It's not a lot. So I'm intrigued. The bull system, it has a special place in a lot of people's hearts, not really in mine, but don't want to screw the players out for a good season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, again, I've mentioned, I think the bull season doesn't necessarily reward good seasons. I think it rewards very mediocre seasons. We saw teams this season with, like, 3 wins make bowl games. That's pathetic, right? Those teams don't deserve it. They don't deserve to go to Mississippi State, as much as I adore Mike Leach and the Mississippi State Bulldogs, they did not deserve to go to a bowl this season. They didn't. They just didn't.
Hey, but that Tulsa MSU fight.
It was good. It was good TV. It was good. That's why they made it. Let's call a space. Yeah, like, that's why they made it, was because they had Mike Leach, and that's guaranteed good TV. Always. He's made for TV. But I think that, you know, I think that the bowl system could be revamped. For example, you could say instead of needing to win 6 games, needing to win 7 or 8 in order to qualify for a smaller pool of bowls, I think would be nice to see. But again, that's a whole nother episode. I guess we could go ahead and talk about the last loser, and we already alluded to it in the beginning. Notre Dame, obviously being the best independent team, and by a wide margin, of course, are going to lose out because they're independent. They cannot win a conference championship, obviously. So they're going to be losing in that. But, again, I think that this could actually help Notre Dame just because, again, giving them that opportunity to play a game under the lights before they've got to get thrown into just the absolute meat grinder that is, you know, the SEC West team that they play, a Big Ten team like Ohio State, Clemson, whoever. You saw this season, even, you know, they played in the ACC, which is a much better competition than they're used to playing by and large, top to bottom, and they still got blown out in the first round. So I think that, you know, having them play those quality games throughout the season, you know, they typically play like Oklahoma and teams like that, a couple of games in that that independent conference schedule because they aren't in a conference. I think that having that extra tune-up game towards the end of the season would be super beneficial to Notre Dame. They're just going to have to live with not getting that bye. But again, the last 20 years would say that they don't deserve a bye. They don't deserve the benefit of the doubt because I hadn't seen it yet.
I'm curious with Notre Dame because, like, they're a loser and a winner at the same time. Like you said, this is a team that you can argue is never worth a top four spot, right? And that's an argument that I'm not going to get too deep into. I know I have some Notre Dame friends, and you do too, so I want to make sure, you know, I don't lose all your friendships here. But, like, what is interesting about it is they sacrificed and kind of said, we're not good enough, but we want to still get our chances in here. I'm really curious about this because it's like, in a weird way, it feels like an admission to that. Like, we can't recruit at the Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State level, which I don't know if it's fair to really kind of always pin on Notre Dame for that, because it's like, hey, those schools, no one else is at that level too. And if anything, Notre Dame is at least kind of pecked up there once in a while and, you know, stuck out their chest to the best of their ability. Is that always fair? Is the committee giving them a benefit of the doubt? Sure. That's not Notre Dame's fault. Like, it's not like, you know, touchdown Jesus was the reason that the committee and Gary Barta was like, you're number four. No, it wasn't Brian Kelly on the podium say it being the reason they got to number four, right? And that's one of these things when I talk about the system too, right? Like, probably my biggest gripe is not going to be with Notre Dame not getting a seat. It's like, all we're doing is moving the conversation from 4 to 13. I'll get to that point in a second. But, like, with Notre Dame, it's like this admission, like, we're probably never going to be at that level, or we're not there and we don't expect to be there. So we're going to take this knowing that this gives us a better chance. It's a really, really interesting non-verbal way to say that, because if they really felt like they were at that level of an Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, they would have fought this. They would have said, you can't have 6 because we deserve to be there. They didn't. And Notre Dame is a school you can actually do that at. Like, yes, you can, you know, Alex, I know you have the numbers and the data to say they don't, but you know what Notre Dame has? Money and tradition. And they're one of the old Goonies, right? Like, you think of Notre Dame when you talk about college football. There's a reason NBC has them. Shout out to KMU. I'm just kidding. But, like, you know, they have all that in their favor, and they still said, we know this is the best move for us. I applaud it because it's realistic. This is kind of, you know, it's an admission, but it's not one that really hurts them. If anything, it's an honest admission that's going to give them a better chance. But in a weird way, they're somewhat of a loser because they're saying, like, hey, we don't expect to be at those levels. And that's really, really intriguing to me. So I'm going to end off this because I kind of made this point. I still have one big gripe about the playoff system. And you're going to be like, Jerry, this whole time you've been talking about how great it is and you've been, you know, very positive. My biggest gripe is, like, we still don't know what qualifies what teams. We know that a conference champion will get in, and, you know, six conference champions and six at-larges. We're still not really going to know how after that. Like, the at-large spot was always a problem, right? The playoff we have right now at four teams is four at-large bids. It's the best four teams. What the hell does that mean? What does the best four mean? We've never known, right? And that's always led to the argument of number five should be number four in most years. All we're going to do right now, and mark my words, is we are going to argue that team 13 should have been team number 12. And until we get a better sense of why at-large teams get to that spot, this system is still going to be really behind. Even behind March Madness. March Madness is not the greatest because you only get like quad one, quad two, quad three, and quad four wins. But at least you have that. At least you can put a resume and not say, I think Texas State San Marcos is a blow-off game for, what are they? They're in the Sun Belt for Louisiana, right? But Louisiana might go, well, we had to go to San Marcos to win that game in 100-degree heat, right? Like, there's no real quantifying system that we have in college football to even help the committee make their case for why number 12 and number 13 are where they are. We're going to have the same debate, and until we get a better glimpse of that, the system is better but not fixed. And I just want to know what determines it. Is it still going to be the eye test now? Is it going to be record more, right? But we don't know that answer, and we probably never will. And that's going to frustrate me even if we go to 1,000 teams, right? Even if your Pee Wee football team, Alex, makes it, and you're the head coach, you might be ranked 555. You won't know why you're at 556. And that's going to bother me forever. And I think that's something as we should still be pushing for, because that's the answer that really matters. Because you can have a great season, but if the CFP committee doesn't think it's good enough, they don't have to tell you why. Doesn't that frustrate you? I feel like I'm speaking to a void a little bit about this, because everyone's like, this is good, look, expansion. All we're going to do is complain about, you know, number 13. And that's all this turned into a little bit, at least in my opinion.
Well, I agree with you, kind of. In a sense, I agree with you, because I get it. You know, there's not as much of a concrete definition of what is a good team, who is a bad team, how do you compare these teams, like there is in college basketball, where they have a defined system. Whether the system is correct or not, that's very debatable, and I'm very open to debate on that, because I think it's a little bit wishy-washy. But they can at least look at data points and say, regardless of whether you think this data is accurate, this is what the data says, and we're going to use this data to make the decision, right? And that makes sense. I do think, though, that it's going to be much harder to make the argument. Like, for example, this season, a team like A&M, and I'll even go as far as to say a team like Florida, had an argument to be the fourth seed, right? Again, Florida, a two-loss team to A&M, who was awesome, and Alabama, who won the national championship, right? Those were the two losses that Florida had. Notre Dame, their big resume sticking point was the fact that they beat Clemson with their backup quarterback. Congratulations, right? Like, I mean, it just didn't make any sense. Clemson, I mean, they got torched by Ohio State. So Clemson wasn't the team that we thought they were. They just played in the ACC, who was not very good. You have Miami, who can't play in big games, and North Carolina, who I think is still about a year away as far as really competing on that kind of level. And you also had the number one pick on your team, and who, again, was missing in the one game that they lost. And so they had a legitimate beef and argument about that. The only game A&M lost this season was to Alabama, again, the national champion. So, I don't buy that quite as much. I think that you could say that A&M's wins were much better than the wins that Notre Dame had. Again, they had the win against Clemson, which is a good win. Beating Clemson even without Trevor Lawrence, not a bad win. It's a win that you want to have on your resume, but it doesn't speak the volumes that you see a team in A&M with the wins that they had and how well they played in a much tougher schedule. It's harder to make that argument if A&M's 13th and Notre Dame's 12th. A&M, you know, if A&M's 13th, that means they've lost three games. They shouldn't be losing three games. If you're a playoff team, you shouldn't have three losses, plain and simple. You know, it's much harder to make that argument like, oh, we got screwed. Like, oh, Cincinnati got screwed. They were undefeated and they were ninth. Okay, well, now they're in the playoffs. And so now they can, you know, they can put their money where their mouth is. And I think it gives a team that deserves to make it will make it. I don't think that you're going to see as much debate because, again, there's a whole lot of debate between Notre Dame at 5, A&M at 6, or, you know, whatever the case may be. there was not as much debate between Notre Dame at four versus a team like, Coastal Carolina was undefeated, but who did they play? They played BYU. BYU was only had one loss in the regular season. That was to Coastal Carolina. But the best team they played besides that was UTSA and Boise without half their team. So you can't make that argument as much. So I think it's a step in the right direction. Again, there's going to be people, the teams that get left out, especially if they are teams with a bigger brand, obviously you're going to be angry. But again, it gives you a clear path and a clear opportunity to make the playoffs. If you win your conference and you are good, you're probably going to make it because you're going to be one of the highest ranked conference winners. If you do not win your conference, but you lose one game to the number one team, you're going to be in the top 12. If you lose two games to the number one team and the second best team in the conference, you're going to be in the top 12. It even if you get into a meat grinder, like even like the Pac-12, if the Pac-12 has a couple of teams that knock each other off, they're still going to be in playoff contention. They're still going to have an opportunity to really put their money where their mouth is and play for it, like they showed in March Madness. Again, nobody would have said going into the March Madness that a Pac-12 team was even remotely a favorite. I'm not sure I had a single Pac-12 team outside of like the round of 32. I mean, you didn't see them lose
Well,
it.
I think
You didn't
one
see
guy
they,
would argue
right,
you.
Lucas
His
Owens.
name's Bill
Oh, well,
Walton.
Lucas Owens would too from our boy from KC, my boy from KCOU. Are you serious? My volleyball co-broadcast, fellow volleyball broadcaster, women's sports aficionado, Lucas Owens, also the Pac-12 insider for KCOU. He knew. We were just sleeping, but then all of a sudden you see teams like USC, UCLA, all those teams. I mean, you couldn't beat those teams if you wanted to. So that's what I get back to. I think that the college football playoff gives way to that. It gives way to a team that, maybe just didn't put it together, or maybe even a coach. Because like that's the biggest thing that people say. You look at a guy like Mick Cronin, right? In the regular season, he's a good coach. He's solid. They barely scraped their way into March Madness, but man, once he gets there, that dude's unstoppable. Same thing with Syracuse and Jim Boeheim. Imagine if Syracuse, if because they played a mediocre season and one of the toughest basketball conferences in the country, that you're not getting Syracuse basketball in March where Jim Boeheim shines. What if we had to miss out on that in college football? We could be missing out on it right now. We have no idea. So I think that having the expanded playoff really. They're at least going to have the opportunity. You're not going to be able to say, "Oh, well, this guy, he's never had the opportunity." Guys like Kirby Smart, they're going to get a chance to play someone besides Nick Saban and have a chance to make a run in a playoff. And I think that's really good for the sport.
An overall win, and Notre Dame still found a way to lose. The college football playoff is definitely, hopefully, going to be coming soon. I'm excited. It's got to go through a couple people, but they don't make press releases like this if they don't think it's going to happen. This has been another episode of Walking the Field. My name is Gerald Hopkins. My co-host, Alex Crowe. We've been on Zoom today, but we'll be back sooner or later in person. We'll have some other episodes coming out here and there, right, as the season starts to heat up, just like recruiting. And, maybe we flip. Who knows? Maybe we'll end up being on a different podcast because, everyone's moving like the transfer portal. So we might move to a different one. I'm just kidding. No, we're stuck here. We're committed, right, to our head coach, Mike Leach, here on Walking the Field. It's not on KCU today, but you can catch us there sooner or later. Thanks for listening. Peace.